It's Wednesday, June 8th, 2011, and you're listening to episode 234 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 53 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And this is Chris.
And we're trying to get Dan to let us tell a pretty profane and obscene story. And he's like, I don't know, guys. We got ratings and standards and stuff.
Why do you think I never talk?
You know, that's probably a really good idea. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe I should get the Kicked in the Dice Bags guys to get me on the show again, because they haven't had me on in a long time.
Like, what, a week?
No, actually, they haven't needed me for a long time.
You know, I think I may have been on over there since you have.
Probably.
With the this one I did with Keith Curtis and Almighty Bear about Superman.
They had Keith Curtis on there. Actually, you know how I've redirected Righteous Hat to Evil Hat?
Yes.
I think I'm going to redirect getdone.com to Keith Curtis.
But getting back to Dan's issue, he won't let us tell this story.
You can tell it if you can keep it down to where I don't have to just make it one long tone over the story.
it would be multiple instances.
How funny would that
be?
The
more they talk about the story, the more I want to hear it.
Just 5 minutes of tone in the episode.
He booped the boop into his boop. It wouldn't be a long tone.
I will tell the story then.
I read that book.
I'll tell the story then.
I think Chris and I have been texting that story.
I can at least keep it within my own rating standards or be responsible for not doing so.
Dan, use the bedroom voice while I do it.
Several years ago, the group of us were playing in a Battletech game.
This is going to get really creepy really fast.
It's the sort of game that we used to really enjoy.
Is this NPR?
Back when we were young. I'm not talking really young. I'm talking like just turned 18.
I've got a lot of videos like that.
I would love to come over to your house and watch some of those videos with you. Deeply, lovingly watch those videos with you.
There's a lot of deeply
we can
involved, yes.
Tuck ourselves in bed beneath that thick quilt that we both love.
And he was worried about you telling the story.
I know. Right,
so we were playing this Battletech game.
Seriously creepy tangent.
So we were playing this Battletech game. This was some years ago. And there was a guy in the game who's not a person who's ever been affiliated with this show, who was playing a female character. Now, I do not, per se, have a problem with someone playing a character of the opposite gender. I don't do it all that often myself, but I have every so often, and I don't have a problem with other people doing it. The problem is they usually screw it up. Mm-hmm. In particular, when a guy plays a girl, for some reason, they're one of two things. They're either psycho bitches or total sluts. That's all they are, is one of the two. And this guy was playing a female character who had been pretty bitchy, but it was acceptable. Until they got to a point where they had a map to something in Battletech that is called a brain cache. And for anyone that's not familiar with Battletech, what a brain cache is an old, like, research lab that was not destroyed in one of the previous purges or wars because it just got missed. It just wasn't hit. And so people, of course, would look for these because this is where they would find all kind of lost technology, or what in Battletech was called lost tech. And they had a map to this, and they were getting chased by a group who outmanned and outgunned them. And they ended up hiding, like, in the back of a house or something like that, or trying to figure out what to do next. At which point, he declares that she is going to secret this map case in some place where an object of roughly that size and shape otherwise might go.
In her pocket?
Yeah, that's
what's he saying in her mouth?
Precisely, in the briefcase.
In the backseat of a
Volvo? Maybe it was a box.
And, yeah.
Was the map case battery powered?
Was it black?
Was it shaped like a fist?
Did it have purple lines running up and down the side?
All right, so I, as a game master...
And he was looking at me like I would have the problem.
I'm sorry, I should have guessed that Chris and Pat would one-up this. If Mikey was here, he'd probably one-up them, maybe. But I was a game master, was just so flabbergasted that after having a few reallys, I just kind of let it go because it's like I was so flabbergasted that I was incapable of mustering a response. I mean, I think in more mature years, I would have said, no, stop. You're done with this character. Mm-hmm. Clearly, you can't handle playing
someone with a vagina.
Yeah, exactly. But at the time, I was so...
It's a vagina, not a clown car.
Precisely.
It's a vagina, not a map carrier.
Yeah, it's not a glove compartment.
Yeah. It's not a concealed holster for a gun. It's...
Anyway, we're going to lead right from that into the March of Dimes. There's a great segue. So, as of this episode going live,
gotta come out.
As of this episode going live, the next auction for the March of Dimes will have gone live as well. You can find the link to eBay in the show notes. Once again, 100% of the money raised for this will go to the March of Dimes National Headquarters. If you're interested in making a donation apart from this auction, you can do so through a link I will also provide in the show notes. In case you do not recall from last week, or this is your first time listening to Fear the Boot, what you are bidding on is a set of Dresden Files books, one copy of the Game Master book called Our World, and several copies of the Your Storybook or the Player's Handbook. So you will have enough to outfit your table of players, like, you know, four people or so ready to play. Fred Hicks will also dip into his collection of dice and send you enough fudge dice to go along with each book so everyone has their own dice. And these books will be signed by Fred Hicks, Rob Donahue, and then also all the Fear the Booters. Now, I do want to warn you of something in advance. Because of the fact that we can't do the signing until we know the person we're customizing the message to, and once we know that, we then have to have the books go from Fred and Rob to us, to Chris, and possibly to John before they get to you. It may take a little bit of time for this to get delivered to you.
Please don't downgrade our stars.
But be forewarned and be patient. It may take us a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever, to get this to you. But we are an honest show. To the best of my knowledge, we've never screwed anyone that's ever been involved in any of our contests. It is coming. It just may take a little bit of time. But the auction will be started as of this show dropping. So if you want to go out there and win what is, I mean, quite frankly, even just off the shelf of your gaming store without all the collector's value signatures and all that other stuff, quite a value, then get out there and get involved. And all your money, 100% of it, will go to this charity. All the shipping and all that other stuff, the product costs, that's all being covered by Fear the Boot and Evil Hat. So
Righteous Hat.
So yes. Not a dime of that will get taken out of your donation. That will all go straight to the March of Dimes.
You know, I imagine Righteous Hat is sort of like the snakes on a train type people. You know, it's like it's Righteous Hat with Anaheim Files, the RPG.
Anaheim Files.
I mean, they have, what would fudge dice be? Brownie dice or something?
So, that's another great segue into our next topic. And this is actually how the guys playing girls got shot down, because it's kind of irrelevant to this topic, but it got thrown out there. The topic we want to talk about is themes and role-playing games. Because role-playing games can, and they don't always, but they can, whether through the plot, through the setting, or through an individual character, PC or NPC, they can explore a variety of social, cultural, and personal themes. Underdog story, the guy, the unexpected guy coming out on top, the ordinary people rising to do extraordinary things, the evil person redeeming himself, the good guy falling from grace. There's all kinds of themes that you can explore. The relationship between man and technology, blah, blah, blah. There are all kinds of themes you can explore. The question got posed, what themes within a role-playing game do we, number one, find overdone, boring, or offensive, and therefore have no interest in seeing in the game? And then number two, what themes would we like to see explored more in a game? And this is when Chad jokingly threw out guys playing girls, and I'm like, no, that is an oftentimes annoying behavior, but it is not per se a theme. I mean, you're not...
Right.
I don't know. I guess if someone's really trying to explore gender relations and taking it seriously, maybe it becomes a theme. But in the context we were throwing around, that's not a theme. All right. So who wants to start off?
I'll start off with one that I want to see. I want to see romance more in games. Not between players, because to me that would be creepy.
Let's keep between characters.
But I mean, even between two player characters, that would be creepy to me. But for me, in my life, marriage was something I strived towards. I got married. that was the natural progression of my life. So for me in game, I want my characters to have that same opportunity. If they survive, I want to know that that's something that they can do.
Real quick, before I respond to that, because I have a thought on that. Ask what's happening to Furigon, because I saw he got the top hat, and that was fine. He got the nose piercing, which actually, it's not pierced. It's just like a clip on his nose.
Yes.
And now he's got the Fear the Con lanyard clipped to his tongue, like a tongue piercing.
The hat was something natural and that needed to be done. The clip was an experimental phase. He's just trying something new. That's why it's a clip, not piercing.
Okay.
And the tongue was just a horrible, horrible accident.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I wasn't going to come in next week and find him with a Prince Albert or something.
Yeah, so, probably. He said he wanted to go to Munich. So
Wayne, cancel the barbell.
All right. So, Wayne, my response to your comment is that I absolutely agree with you. I'm going to throw in a caveat, but I absolutely agree with you. Because of the fact that if I look at my own life, throughout my younger years, seeking romance and trying to figure out romance took up a lot of my thought.
Right.
And even though I was, quite frankly, too chicken to ever really act on any of it, nonetheless, it took up a huge amount of my thought. In my adulthood, my marriage and the things that I do with Carl and the relationship that I have with her obviously take up a huge amount of my social life. They make up a large part of my identity. And it is odd that in our games, they're always absolutely gone.
I have never had it as part of a game.
Well, let me ask you a question, though, and this may or may not lead into my caveat, which is, you said that you would not find it palatable between two player characters. So if you had a character and I was playing a female character, those two characters were romancing, it would kind of creep you out. But if I am a game master playing a female NPC, how is that any different?
Well, it's all a matter of how much is that character in the spotlight. Another player character is going to be in the spotlight a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know, an NPC that the GM is controlling isn't necessarily there every week, isn't in the forefront.
Okay, so is it
it doesn't come up as... I want it to be a subplot.
It's a subplot.
Yeah.
Is it maybe also kind of reading between the lines of what you're saying? That if I have one character, I'm a player character. When you look at me, or when you think about that character, you see me. But if I'm a GM, I'm the world. So when you think of me, you think of the world.
That's a big part of it, too, actually.
Okay, I get that.
The GM's already playing many characters. The GM's already playing female characters and male characters. And, you know, you get used to it.
Okay, I can see that.
I'm with Wayne on that one. Just, that's a theme I have explored once or twice before in an RPG. And it was really interesting. And for me, it added some depth and some realism to the characters. But yet it was never something that I ever have been able to fully explore, but would like to, because I do think it's an interesting theme and just would be, I don't know, it'd be a lot of fun.
I don't have a problem with it myself. I don't quite understand. I think you're going to the obvious thing, 500 pound gorilla in the room, that you're just not saying it. But
which
for
is
me,
the 500 pound fat beard in the room that, well, you're thinking is your girlfriend because you're not in prison.
God,
yeah,
that's hot.
Sure.
It's but, so pretty.
Do you want me to say that in my bedroom voice?
It's not something that's... I don't think it's...
I'll turn that into
this
a
isn't
ring
something
tone.
That's going to come up all the time with other player characters.
A
because
ding tone.
This isn't something that's going to come up all the time with other player characters, especially because I don't think you're going to find that all the time that, you know, guys are going to be playing
sorry,
girls.
Sorry, Pat. Now I want ring-a-ding ding tone. Dan's saying that as Dan's ringtone for my phone.
Okay. I'm sure we can work on that.
That's Pat, go on.
We have the equipment.
But, you know, occasionally that will come up. And it, like for me, in one of the campaigns that I was playing in, one of the other characters, which was a guy, he played a female elf, and she was, you know, she was beautiful. She was, you know, extremely gorgeous and very attractive, whatever. So, and my character was, imagine this, he was, you know, he was kind of a, not really a lech, but he was like a ladies man. So like,
do you ever
I was hitting on her. Yeah. I mean, I was hitting on his character all the time because she's freaking hot. And for me, it was not weird because I didn't think of it as I'm trying to romance Dan.
Right.
I am in character. I realize I'm playing a character and your character is a hot female elf. So, yeah, I'm interacting with you like I would if this was actually real.
Well, it's kind of going on.
And it didn't bother me at all. I mean, I never felt wigged out about it or anything.
It's kind of going on in our current game, though the character you're hitting on is played by your wife, so it's somehow not all that weird.
Well, yeah, that's...
Well, and actually, in that case, for me, my character is also, like you're describing, the lech, the ladies' man, that would generally hit on any attractive female.
Uh-huh.
I, as a player, don't want to have if my character hit on your wife's character.
So
I had to watch in-game. I was looking for a reasonable reason why he wouldn't. And I went way out there to find one, and I had no problem finding it.
Well, and that's that brings up another issue along, you know, talking about this topic is and I think we've talked about this a little bit before, that can become awkward. I mean, if you're in a situation where you're flirting with a character, but this character happens to be someone else's wife, if that's a problem in your group, and I mean, you have to get to know the people. Like, for us, this is not a problem because, like I said, we're role playing. I know you're not hitting on Beth.
I would have been uncomfortable doing it, so I knew the character never would.
You're uncomfortable doing it, but
I just
need
to find a reason why it never.
But you know, it depends on the people. You know, there are certain people that I am comfortable enough with that I would do that because I know that they understand it, or their significant others understand it, whatever. But then there are others that I wouldn't, because I know that this won't fly because there might be some misunderstanding.
And let's face it, Pat, if you were playing a hot chick, we would be flirting with each other the entire game.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's do another one. Evil. Who wants to take the for, and I know Chris is going to take the against.
I'm totally against playing evil characters.
I've tried it before, and even in the campaign where we played evil characters, couldn't make his alignment be evil. He had to be, I think he was like chaotic neutral or something like that. I just couldn't. In fact, I had actually kind of hoped near the end that my character would be able to betray the other PCs. I just couldn't do it. The idea of committing evil acts, you know, evil in the sense of harming another person, I can't internalize that. Even though it's imaginary, and even though on the other side of the fence, I've got my, you know, quote unquote good character killing other people and causing great harm to them, yet it's just the way it's in my head. I can't do it. And when I was in that evil campaign, I was not enjoying myself.
You know, I get that. I can't play an evil character in a video game. In our current campaign, I think our characters, they're getting less and less evil as we go through, as they grow.
Less and more in others.
But
yeah.
For me, this is my chance to explore that eviler character that I can't seem to do in a video game.
I think you
game.
Slide around the range of amoral. I wouldn't call your character evil. I would call other characters pretty damn evil. I love an evil campaign because I don't see it as black and white evil. There's all sorts of different people in the world, and you know, one person who thinks that they're pretty bad and terrible, there's always somebody out there who's worse. But there's also motivations. Instead of just being the snidely whiplash, tying nuns to the tracks, evil, why are they evil? What's motivating that? What's the deeper story behind these bad things that they do? Do they see themselves as evil? Or do they see themselves as making the hard decisions for what they, from their perspective, is right? Evil is great if you throw alignment out the window. If you don't have that thing on your character sheet, those two little letters of CE or LE that say, when you make a choice, 9 times out of 10, it's got to be bad. And if it's good, it's got to work out in your favor or something like that. No, it's the campaign we're playing right now, the character of Alvaro. Alvaro was not a good person. He was an NPC that I ran, one of my best NPCs, actually. I really liked him. But the players came to him and they're like, oh, he's doing this and this. He's obviously evil. And as they got to know him, they're like, is he really so evil? Or do we just disagree with him? And Alvaro didn't change. He kept his internal consistency. It's just that the players thought about him more and learned more about the situation and learned that maybe he was evil, or maybe he wasn't. Maybe he's bad, but just not as bad as we think it is. And there was a real internal conflict until Wayne's character murdered him.
Too wishy-washy.
But, you know, I think that's part of where my own problem comes with that, Chad, is that in the times that I've been exposed to it, it has been a bit more on the snidely whiplash end of that spectrum, not necessarily the sliding scale, because I have no problem playing characters who are selfish and self-centered and do things that benefit only themselves, even if it does cause some discomfort and a little bit of misery for others. Yet at the same time, if I sit there and I look at it, that moral compass or whatever you want, that internal thing that pilots your life, it's hard for me to get over that point.
See, I look at it like, imagine we're playing Hamlet. We're playing the fanfic role-playing game of Hamlet.
Right.
Is Hamlet an evil character? From my personal perspective, I consider him a pretty evil guy. mean, he's killing people left and right. He can't let this stuff go. He's not bringing people to justice. He's bringing them to revenge. And, you know, he's doing some pretty nefarious thing, and he's hurting a lot of people on his road to revenge. I consider him evil. Someone else at the table might consider him, well, he is doing the only thing he can do, and he has to make this situation right. And he, you know, there is a path to justice, and justice is more important than, you know, again, there's a debate. There's a conversation that can be had. Should we take Hamlet's character sheet and put lawful evil on it or chaotic? I mean, that's why I mean, that's the point I'm trying to. Yeah, I don't want to
get caught on the alignment.
I don't want to turn an alignment wank. I don't want to turn this into should we be playing Hamlet.
Evil also leads to a lot of things that we don't want in games. For me, I could be a character that's willing to destroy planets. My character will never harm an animal in game because I, as a player, don't want to experience that.
Well, and I'm sure Pat would say the same thing about kids. Yep. Mm. Whereas, like, for me personally, that's not a boundary. To me, people are people are people are people. I don't care what age you are. But when playing something evil, and Chris, I respect the fact that playing evil makes you uncomfortable.
It should.
It should. And that says good things about you. There are things about both of my two player characters right now that make me uncomfortable, one more so than the other, but both of them make me somewhat uncomfortable to play. And I will say that one of the things that I have hated seeing in the past was, for several years, I played with a guy who loved to play evil characters, and he got off on it. Mm-hmm. And man, mm-hmm. it bugged me. It is a theme I never want to see in a role-playing game again. A joyous evil, a gleeful evil. I mean, it is something I never want to see again. It is just sick. But I think what you really have to find is, as strange as this is to say, a form of evil that's palatable to people at your table. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, let's go after some obvious ones here. For some reason, role-playing games, we kill all the time. Sometimes with little justification. The shopkeeper wasn't giving me information fast enough, so I killed him and took his sword.
The leader of a dude wasn't giving me information fast enough, so I killed him.
Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, I think it's fairly safe to say that in the vast majority of groups, people would generally be uncomfortable exploring other themes of evil, such as racism, mm-hmm. especially real-world racism. Rape. Mm-hmm. Torture is one that we were talking about.
Yeah, I have a problem with torture.
And, you know, and I don't want to get into this huge debate about where does the right of exploration end and censorship begin and all that kind of stuff. I'm not trying to start that debate.
I'm
not telling you there is a right or wrong answer, nor am I inviting you to come on the forums and explain why there's a right or wrong answer.
You're playing in a group with a guy whose mother was raped, and you're playing an evil campaign. Guess what?
Don't be a dick.
Yeah, don't play a rapist.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom.
Know it's the easy. Boundaries of the people you're playing with. Know what creeps them out. Know what they can and can't mm-hmm. handle. Which is why, for example, in our current campaign, I'm playing a gnoll. He eats sapient creatures.
I was about to say cannibal. Cannibal's the wrong word because I guess they do eat other gnolls.
Yeah.
But he is a cannibal.
Gambit.
Yeah.
He's an omnivore.
He
has a certain flow to his thought, a certain code of honor. But quite frankly, it's pretty loose, and it really takes nothing more than a whim for him to kill someone. But because I am playing with Pat, I intentionally gave this character a sort of fatherly quirk around children, to where when he goes mm-hmm. into a town and daddy pays a copper to let their kids climb on the 8-foot-tall knoll, you know, like a circus freak show, that while he plays all the big and bad knoll and has to pretend he hates it, somewhere deep down he likes it. And then we brought up a couple games back that now with the second of his tribe, who's a female knoll, he has pups of his own. I intentionally wrote around a certain aspect of that evil. Another example is in D&D, they set out pretty clearly that half-orcs don't come from a willing relationship. Mm-hmm. If I was playing an orc, where unlike the gnolls, they might have impulses towards human women, I would be very careful about playing that unless I knew the group was okay with that sort of evil coming up. Moving to a completely different theme, one that I am tired of seeing is mercenaries. Now, let me set this very carefully. I don't mean mercenaries
that
just
you're playing. It's just mercenaries everyone else is playing.
No, I mean me playing mercenaries. What I mean by mercenaries is not specifically we're a mercenary company, but more that we are a group who is only motivated by profit. That is the only thing in the world that motivates us is fat loots. Whether that's a paycheck, whether that's salvage rights, whether that's the treasure at the bottom of the dragon's lair, I don't care what it is. That is a really overdone group template.
I don't so much have a problem with that. I mean, I totally see where you're coming from. Because as a game master, that's really hard. If your plot story... Well, it's boring. Well, if your plot and story needs the group to kind of go beyond the next paycheck, like saving the universe, you don't get paid when you save the universe. The group kind of has a little bit of a breakdown. They start asking really fair and logical questions of, why are we doing this? Isn't there a military to handle this sort of thing? We're just trying to make a buck. How much can you pay me? It causes issues. Not to say that playing a mercenary is a bad thing, but, you know, it kind of does some limiting things for the game master. But on the other hand, I like the idea of one of the hooks that draws a group of characters together to be a business. Like, there is a business, and they're each employees of the business, and they're all working together. That actually provides some great hooks that the game master can use. But, you know, I think it's even better if all the players have a stake in ownership in the business, and then they have, like, a reason to say, well, we're going to ignore the bottom line here, guys, this month to, you know, save the universe.
Because that's where I keep my stuff. You can't buy stuff if the universe isn't there. Stuff.
I know, man, right?
Yeah, if it's not in the universe, you know where it's got to go.
That's where are you going to retire?
My favorite episodes of The Tick ever.
Where are we? I don't know, but I know we're not in the universe because you destroyed it.
One that I don't think, or at least that I don't get to experience often enough, and I would like to see more of it is, and this is a little bit of an overused one, I guess, in some campaigns, but redemption. It's easily one of my favorite themes. I love redemption stories, but I don't get to see it, unfortunately, very often. Or as a player, I certainly don't get to play it very often because I GM more than I play, but I don't see a lot of my players bringing it up either. And I really wish they would, because that's a story that I could get into and can really add a lot to and make it an enjoyable story. But I don't get to see it very often. I would like to see that.
You know, I don't get to see that one very often either, because you have to get to the end of the campaign for it to happen. We've had the theme of redemption has been in every game that we've played it, but we've never reached the redemption point in it.
I actually had a different comment / I guess it's more of a question, which is, Chris, if you like the theme of redemption, you realize that to do that, you have to start by playing an evil character.
True, but I think in one angle, I think that you can certainly play a character who has faults. It doesn't have to be an Anakin Skywalker level of redemption, although that certainly for me has an appeal. It can even be to lesser degrees, even if it's reconciling with a family member or just in a past relationship or just righting a previous wrong that you may have done that wasn't necessarily looked at as an evil act. You know, that kind of thing. I always love reading the descriptions for paladins type characters, whatever the game may be, whatever their particular incarnation of, and what happens to them when they commit those mortal sins and they have to go and serve that penance. The opportunity to play that out, I think, for me, would be great.
Okay, I get you, because as you're talking about redemption, now you're right. I guess it doesn't have to be redemption from evil. It could also be just redemption from failure.
The coward that stands up in a moment of bravery.
Or just something like, for example, what was that Mickey Rourke movie that came out a little while back? The Wrestler?
Wrestler,
the fight?
Yeah.
Yeah, about a guy who's kind of, you know, a washed-up bomb out trying to redeem himself, but not in the moral sense, mm-hmm. per se. It was, you know, more in the...
Well, he had to redeem himself in the eyes of his daughter, and he had to redeem himself a little bit, even in his own career, his own failed career, and try to, you know, get that one second chance to really try and make something of himself so he felt satisfied with, you know, where his life had gone to.
I also think that you could play a redeemed character where it is a constant struggle to maintain your redeemedness that lasts throughout the whole campaign. You fail. The example I was thinking of is day one, the first moment of the first game of this new campaign, you play an alcoholic and he is one day sober.
I knew you were going to say that, because that's exactly what I was thinking in my head, is that, yeah, you're, and that, but see, that
Psychic.
Requires... That requires a...
Do you know what song I was thinking of? Because I was thinking of Bob Marley's Redemption song the whole time you were talking about this.
Nice. Now you made me lose my train of thought.
It's a good song.
No, but what you would need for something like that, though, is you need a player who is really invested and who is willing to trust, that has that good GM and player trust to let themselves dive in and go back into that addiction and do that destructive behavior that could... bring harm to their character so that they could then try and get back out. And a lot of players aren't willing to try and take that risk.
I like the fact that it's constant, because to me, there's the path of least resistance redemption. You play a religious guy who's lost his faith, and near the 75% done mark of the campaign, he regains his faith, and that's it. He's done. He's redeemed. Ding, the character's finished.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to put more thought into
it. Well, and honestly, I mean...
And I've played characters like that, too.
Look, I mean, if you've lived long enough in life, you've probably at some point tried, I hope, to change a major flaw in your own personality. And when I say you, I'm not talking to Chad, I'm talking to you.
Why are you looking at me?
The unspecified, you know, you. You realize it's a process of a whole lot of ups and downs with the idea that the overall trend is up. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of falling off the horse along the way. There's a lot of screwing up. There's a lot of going back to it. And I think that makes a much more compelling redemption story. And actually, you talking about alcoholism made me think of another one I don't see done very often in games, at least not done well, which is addiction of any kind. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be. It could be chemical addiction. But it could also be, for example, some kind of compulsive behavior. It could be any number of things. But I don't see really any form of addiction ever really dealt with in an RPG. I think mostly because...
Because it's a disadvantage and a weakness. And
bingo.
Most people don't like playing.
It's an exploitable weakness.
Yeah.
It's a weakness the GM can exploit, and it's a weakness that on a regular basis, in order to stay consistent, you have to hit yourself with. And I think as a result, a lot of people are uncomfortable playing it.
As a GM, somebody came into our current game and said, well, hey... I want to play an alcoholic. How can we do this? I would look at them and I go, I think that's great. I think it's wonderful. I think it's all on you. I'm not going to make you roll for alcoholism. I'm not going to say you guys go into a bar and the bartender puts down 3 cups of mead, roll your will save. DC 15. No, you're really under a lot of stress. DC 18. No, because that's just stupid. It's a role-playing thing. Role-play it out.
Right.
You know, and that way the GM, it's not something that the players have to worry about the GM constantly exploiting or pushing. But then again, that gets back to the trust thing. But a lot of the people I know, a lot of the people I play with or have played with over the years, they don't like playing the weakness. They don't like playing the disadvantage. Every time they make a character, they put all their stats where they need to be or where they should be. And then they take all the powers and they take very few weaknesses. And the weaknesses are just something that they kind of work around to get more points for power.
I love playing with weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think addiction is one that I personally would want to explore myself. I don't know why, but just the idea of it is something that just doesn't appeal to me.
I tried to play addiction once in one character. I was playing a juicer in Rifts that was addicted to drugs. Obviously, because that's what juicer's all about, and then addicted more to even more recreational drugs. And it was just not fun to play that, and I couldn't really wrap my head around it. It is a failing on my part, and I just couldn't really wrap my head around the addiction aspect of it. I think that if I were to play addiction, I think I would hit the internet and read up on like what addiction really is. If I chose somebody who had a gambling addiction, what does that really mean? Does that mean that I cannot keep a coin in my pocket and I have to gamble away it all? Does it mean that I hide that gambling? Does it mean that I go to friends who aren't gamblers and I say, guess what, I bet you $10 that we'll make it to this adventure.
And I'm sure it's going
to
be a little different for every person.
Yeah.
I mean, if you read around enough, especially on recovery sites, eventually you will find a story that you can model a character after. And as a way of keeping it consistent or correct, say, you know what, I'm basically taking it from this story, these 2 or 3 stories where they're all similar in the way that they were expressed and the kind of journey they went through. The one game where I played a character who was something of an alcoholic, it actually didn't go so well for the simple reason that he did not on his own have a motivation to change it. And the RP in the game was not deep enough or interconnected enough that anyone was trying to reach out to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really just kind of became this thing that he was doing on the side that never got dealt with whatsoever and just kind of became dumb. 2 themes I would love to see come up more often. I've seen them in games. I'd love to see them more. One is meaningful friendship. I don't mean a balanced party. I mean characters who genuinely have a reason to care about each other. And I've seen it done.
I see that all the time.
You know, for example, Pat and I's character in the current game.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we came from radically different worlds and quite frankly, Ballarat should be enemies, our characters have come to understand each other in a certain way.
More than a meaningful friendship, I like seeing the realistic friendships. And how I mean that is, again, our current campaign, Gnarl and Sir William, Wayne's character. Gnarl hated Sir William because he represented everything that was an antithesis to your society and to your
never
belief.
Never hated him, just never respected him.
Never respected him. I think it got pretty bordered on hate at one point, and then Sir William started doing some other stuff, totally not even trying to impress you at all, and it impressed Gnarl. And Gnarl tentatively reached out a sort of paw of friendship, which was very outside Gnarl's comfort zone. Yeah. And Sir William was such a bon vivant and such just totally head in the clouds. It's like, oh, no, thanks. I'm going to go off over here. La 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 la. And Gnarl's like, you
lost all respect for him again.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, lost all respect for him again.
And to this day, it's been like 2 years later, Sir William has no clue that happened.
And Gnarl doesn't hate him. He just has absolutely no respect for him whatsoever.
It's been a real roller coaster.
It's been great. And see, I want the realistic, I guess, friendships and relationships.
Right.
Meaningful relationships fall under that umbrella. That's what really tweaks it in a role-playing game for me, realistic relationships.
The amusing thing in our current game is William has the same thing with Pat's character.
Mm-hmm.
He loves Saren. Saren is the best friend he has in the world. Gareth, the elder version of Saren, who is a elder sitting there doing paperwork, that guy drives him crazy. It's the same character, but it's...
Well,
and all the while, what does Gareth / Saren feel about Sir William?
Well, Saren's letting him believe a whole lot of pretty lies. So.
Well, that's everybody. True too. Yeah, that's everybody's. But how does he feel about Sir William?
He likes him because, like I said, it's one of the things that he's never really
had a real,
let's call it non-elder friendships. Obviously, he's strong, he's tight with his family, and he has had relationships in the past, but most of the time... The peasantry is just that. It's
again, this is what really tweaks it for me is the realistic relationship. When that bad guy looked at you and were like, "Why? I want him. Why are you protecting? Why do you care? How many friends have you had in 1,000 years? What's one more?" And you're like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just like, wow, that blew when you did that, that blew me away. It was so deep and cool.
I have to agree with Dan. I haven't really seen this in our other games either. There are realistic relationships between each of the characters. Mm-hmm. They all have friendships that have ups and downs. In our previous games, I don't think I've seen that as much.
Yeah, everyone had a reason to be together.
Sky's of Glass game had a lot of that.
There's a coherent
group template. I just didn't see as much because I came in mid-game.
It was in the Sky's of Glass game, there was, at least from my perspective, there was a lot of negative feelings towards my characters based on his actions.
And it also seemed like it was more that you guys had commonality.
Yeah.
You came from similar backgrounds and were headed in the same direction. It was not so much like you guys were friends. The way I oftentimes tell in my own mind, I don't know, striate the types of relationships I have is if I have someone that I pal around with at work or in whatever other context, but outside of that context, I don't ever pick up the phone and call them, they're not a friend. And I would say the same thing in an RPG group. For a moment, imagine you had no dragon to kill, no maiden to save, no planet to keep the aliens away from. Would these people still hang out? If the answer is no, they ain't friends.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, this one we do explore fairly often in our games, but I love it and can't get enough of it, is moral complexity, where there's not so much the evil fleet admiral, so much as maybe has a point. But at the same time, you really just can't get behind what he's doing. But if you stop him, you may let a worse evil get away.
Mm-hmm.
And
love that kind of stuff.
Same here. I won't ruin it for anyone. Fable 3 has an awesome moral twist near the end of it.
Except you have to play through Fable to get it, and that's kind of a...
People have a lot of mixed feelings on Fable, so I'm not trying to sell Fable here. But I love that. I love it when things are not so black and white, and you have to make hard choices, and it's not really so clear that, yeah, this guy's blatantly just puppy kicking evil. So,
and what that really leads to in our Skies of Glass game, we came to different conclusions about different characters. There was one character, Chad's character, hated, thought the guy was evil. My character agreed with him and was ready to support him. I think things like that could really add to the game.
Oh, you're talking about Frederick Kane?
Yeah.
I just think I was never really sure if he was evil or not. He certainly had his own designs.
You know, yeah. There are people sitting here listening and go, who the f*** is Frederick Kane?
Well, they should read the resource documents. It's actually in the resource
documents.
We put them out so rarely anymore that when we do, I mean, it's not that hard to go.
You're going to have to link that.
Yeah, it's not that hard.
That's a great side benefit of morally complex characters, though. You can have party dissent about what to do.
And then you have realistic relationships, and they role play out realistically, and everybody plays to the truth of their character. And I think that it's great on tangent here. It's great when the game master plays to the truth of his characters too. You play as in character as possible. You make a deep character and you play that character as deeply as possible.
And then the character gets married and you're done.
And that's it. Done. Happily ever after, period. But you know, you play them as truthfully as possible and they're deep enough, then they start having these relationships with people. You know, it's like somebody comes up who's a complex character and the guy's role playing him out. Then it's like there are things that you'll do and things that you won't do and things that you will say. And you throw that out there and you see how you react. And boom, you got a role playing game with a lot of narrative, story, RP elements into it. And it's great.
You know, I want to take a quick aside here before we jump back into listening to themes off to talk about the usefulness of this conversation, because obviously we're expressing a lot of opinion.
Totally here. Wasted, useless. Welcome to Fear the Boot.
But welcome to RPG podcasting in general. I mean, we're a bunch of guys sitting here dorking around about a hobby on the mics. I mean, if you're expecting a return on your Roth IRA, you've come to the wrong place. But where I see the usefulness of this is, you know, we talk a lot about all the stuff we say is tools in your toolbox. And this is the same sort of thing. I don't think any game should have one and only one theme. It may have a central theme and then tangent themes, and that's fine. But the point being that when you find something that fascinates your players, when you find something that really gets at them on a visceral, emotional level, then that's something that you ought to look to integrate into your plots, into your NPCs. If they're really into moral complexity, make a plot where it's never really clear who the bad guys are, and it's five shades of gray, and they have to pick the one they're going to side with. Mm-hmm. If they're really into romance, throw an NPC in there that's likely to catch the eyes of one of the players. You know, this is something that you can use to create tones, to create possibly even entire plot arcs within your game. And so as we sit here and rattle off these themes, what I would challenge you to do is not just contemplate the ones that we're throwing out, but stop and think for yourself. What are the themes I like and don't like? Ask your fellow players in your group, what are the themes you guys like and don't like? Because these can help you start to create ideas and set boundaries on the games and possibly go in directions you wouldn't have before. You know, TV shows, especially episodic ones, are great in this regard. Typically, every episode, Star Trek in particular, loves to do this, explores a different theme. This particular week is about what it means to be alive. This week is about what it means to love. This, et cetera, et cetera. And they make it a little bit myopically focused. But nonetheless, it's a great place to look to kind of see how you could take a theme and weave it into a larger plot line, or use a plot line or a character as a backdrop for that theme.
Whether it's Star Trek or Law and Order does that same thing too. I mean, sometimes you get those types of situations where there is a little bit of ambiguity, and there's many times in those episodes where the outcome that you think should happen or that you might be expecting, the quote-unquote happy ending, doesn't always happen. I mean, Star Trek was kind of the same way too. With a couple of episodes. And there's nothing wrong, I think, with even exploring those particular avenues where the characters know they're right, they know they should come out on top, but yet they don't.
Chad, I'm going to kick one to you.
Whoa.
I gave two I liked. I got two here I don't like. But First, I'm going to kick this one to you.
Because is this a like?
I don't know. You tell me.
No, I mean, do you like this one?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
I would say 90-some-odd percent yes. Not 100%, but very high yes. Mm-hmm. What Chris just threw out, the happy ending.
I love happy endings. I love them so much.
All right, not in the past.
How come you didn't kick that one to Pat?
I'm sorry.
I know, because as soon as you said it, I nodded my head, and Chad just like you shaking his head on the other side. Like, all right. He knew.
Best ending I have ever put into a role-playing game was at Fear the Con, and it was my Silent Memories game where the team succeeded and they saved humanity and they died in the process. That was great. They died so that the human race can live.
I think I could live with a tragic ending, and this is why I put it in the high 90s of yes. I can live with a tragic ending. I think what I could not live with is an unsuccessful ending, because I would basically feel like, why did I just play this game? We just played an entire campaign trying to save the universe, and the universe got destroyed, and my character's dead, and we didn't progress anywhere. I mean, I realize for some people, they would argue, look, for me, it's the journey, not the destination. There's a great story along the way. The fact that it didn't work out the way we wanted, that's cool with me. This is purely a personal taste thing. I would look at that and say, why did we just do this story?
I would agree. I would feel like I had just wasted a lot of time.
I could handle it being tragic. I could handle it even not quite succeeding in the way we had thought. But if it was just out like, nope, you fail, you're all dead, everything's lost,
well,
it was all pointless.
What if the players failed on their own merits? And I'm not talking like you have to kill the dragon and you just failed to kill the dragon because you didn't have enough DPS to take it down, and then the healer
was DPSing.
Yeah, the healer went AFK. Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking that. I'm talking like in a real deep, complex, multi-layered, multifaceted plot where it isn't just a good end, bad end, where it's like all these different sort of things could happen, and then the players ran it through up into the end.
It would be such
and it. I don't want to say it's the player's fault, but it's the players made the decisions that they felt that they had to make, and they felt that they had to make in character, and they did it. And it wasn't necessarily the universe gets saved and everyone's right. happily ever after.
Well, I'm going to respond to that, admitting up front that my response deviates from my usual love for realism and in-characterness. This is simply a metagame truth about the kinds of stories Dan wants to see. I could accept that, provided I understood the impact of my character's choices. If it was one of those things where I did the best I thought I could do and still lost, I would kind of feel like I got shafted. I would kind of feel like the GM put me in a no-win scenario just because three guys walk up and say, save us all, and I can only save one, and I saved the one guy, and it was the other two that had the disease cure, and I had no way of knowing this.
Oh, that's
you know, and that's kind
that's of... That's an ass pull right there.
Well, and
that would be my question to you, though, Dan, is if you were in a situation where your own personal character arc was satisfied, but yet the overarching plot was in that way where it wasn't fulfilling, would you still walk away feeling good about it? Yeah, you may not have accomplished the ultimate goal, but you personally accomplished your own personal character goals and were successful in those.
Yes, because if you recall, I said it had to be a successful ending, but I didn't define success.
Right.
And so in that regard, I'd say, yes, I succeeded in what I set out to do. And if what you set out to do is to tell a character arc and you lose the universe in the process, then you still succeeded at the game.
And I don't know, this is going to sound kind of silly, but what defines the end? I mean, from a story perspective.
Well, I realize that's,
well, you know, that's when actually one of mine. A ambiguous end, one where you don't quite know what happens.
Slay the dragon.
That
the
would drive me crazy.
Slay the dragon's slain, pretty clear cut, that's over, done, good job, guys. And again, you when you have a story and a plot that's more complex than that, and it's worthy of complex and well-written characters who are multifaceted and who are really plugged into this thing, what is the end?
I need a definitive end, maybe even an epilogue. For me, if the ending is ambiguous, if it ends and I don't know what's going to happen next, if it ends on one of those, like if it were to end on a cliffhanger, that's a little extreme, but you know what I mean. If it ends on one of those things where things are still up in the air questioning, you know, we've saved the universe, but we have no idea what was really going on, that would drive me crazy.
Yeah. I do think that all good stories have a lot of reveals by the end of it. It's, do you need to reveal everything? Are you allowed to keep mystery? Yes, absolutely. But I think that there needs to be reveals more than there needs to be closure.
Discovery is a theme I love. The theme of, we woke up this morning believing the world was one way and went to bed that night learning the world's a very different place than we thought. I love that sort of stuff.
One of the things I want to explore more that it doesn't happen because most games are traveling is I love a very rich NPC supporting cast. Like the town you're in, the muffin baker.
The idea that your characters have a context in the world that isn't constantly shifting.
Exactly. I like getting to know the characters around me, the NPCs around me, not the characters. I like having them be something I regularly role play with.
Yeah.
That's part of the world. And you don't get that as much when you're traveling.
I blame Lord of the Rings for that. Because a lot of fantasy and whatnot is based on Lord of the Rings. And Lord of the Rings is all about traveling from place to place to place to place.
You get a lot of that in sci-fi, too. But, if you're on a ship in space.
From role-playing game standpoints, because then role-playing games are based a lot on this fantasy, which is based on Lord of the Rings, and then extrapolate out from there.
I want a supporting cast to play
The hero's adventurous journey is taken a little too literally in role-playing games.
If I look at my life in a given week, there are probably several dozen people that I interact with, know on a first-name basis, and have some kind of relationship with. Yet, in a role-playing game, you're right. If you move around a lot, that number is probably going to be the number of players plus maybe two or three recurring NPCs.
Well, it's like I always say, you know what a traveling adventurer really is? Unemployed.
Well, and this leads into the one that I'm going to close on. This is a theme that, fortunately, we've grown past in our games, but is still one that I cringe at, is the unidimensional quest, where you know, hour one of game one, that the objective is to get back the magical sword, the lost alien relic, whatever it is. From hour one of game one, all the way through the final hour, 3 years later in the campaign, that is all you are trying to do. The plot never changes directions. Sure, there might be some subplots or distractions along the way, but it's every game ends with you're within 6 inches of it, but it's just out of reach.
I hate MacGuffin. I hate MacGuffins in general, even if it's not 6 inches out of reach.
I don't mind it as a plot or a part of a game, but it's when the campaign becomes a unidimensional quest. Man, I want to stab myself.
Mm-hmm. Or you can take it from a different tack, too. You can look at it like sort of a Pulp Fiction thing. What's in the case? Is Pulp Fiction about the case? No, it's not about the case. But the case kind of draws people around it, and a story happens around, but not directly involving the case. Or things happen because of the case.
You know, you guys are the first place I had ever heard the word MacGuffin in one of our early games.
We didn't make it up.
I know. You guys had used it, and all that time I figured out what you were meaning when you said it. I never heard an origin for the word until listening to a comic book podcast the other day. And I was like, oh, that's where it comes from.
Well, where'd they say it came from? Because I thought it came from
Hitchcock?
Hitchcock, yeah.
That was one of the places that they were referring to. But yeah, it was something, I thought it was something that was just a unique to gaming term until I heard someone mention it in the terms of movie in Hitchcock. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's something that we stole from Hitchcock, essentially.
Well, you know what I really...
Because Hitchcock never stole anything.
No, no one ever steals anything from anything.
You know a theme that I really do love is when we end an episode with topic material left over, so we have something for next week.
Spicy.
I believe now for...
I like to explore
for two episodes, we've been putting off rewarding players and characters, incidentally.
And I think we should put that off even more because players don't need to be rewarded.
Well...
That's right, because then they'll appreciate the reward when we finally do talk about it.
A hat tip to Noble Bear and Psionic Ranger, who are the ones that inspired this topic. But we will get to that.
There's a min-max character. A Noble Bear and a Psionic Ranger. No, you cannot play those in my game.
He could LARP that in your game.
Yeah, I'm sure they both could.
I don't know about Psionic Ranger so much, but Noble Bear, he can LARP that. So anyway, we will get to that next episode. But once again, as for these themes, I hope they've given you something to think about in terms of setting up the content of your game, trying to weave more things in there or possibly remove some things that may be bugging the people you're playing with. Don't forget the auction. Once again, going to a great cause, and we got a great product up there for you guys to get a hold of. And thank you all for tuning in, and we will catch you next week.
Peace out.
Later day.
See ya. This has been a production of Hear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.